Blog Talk Radio.
Cybersecurity expert Charles Tendell.
Systemic failures that brought their whole systems down.
Charles Tendell, he's a certified ethical hacker.
Your emails, it turns out, are not nearly as private as you think.
Show really how vulnerable we are.
Charles Tendell, who deals with hackers all the time, says,
if you have to ask yourself, is this right? It probably isn't.
Welcome. What's going on, guys? Welcome once again here on the Charles Tendell Show. Hopefully you guys know who I am and what I'm about. If not, you're headed over to thecharlestendellshow.com where you can like, subscribe, share, and do all the other fantastic stuff that you do while listening to this show. Now, mind you, you can find it iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spotify, and a couple other places out there online. My personal favorite is SoundCloud. So if you're a member or you're signed up on SoundCloud.com, go do that. If you're not, go do that and follow this show, The Charles Tendell Show. You can find it out there where all fine podcasts are given away, sold, where people create content and you can actually consume the content as you see fit. For those of you who join the show every single day on your drive at 5:17 for you military people, 5 p.m. for civilian people, thank you for being here on The Charles Tendell Show. Enjoy talking to you guys. And any feedback, all things, please send them over to Charles at thecharlestendellshow.com. If you want to come on the show, you can go to booking at thecharlestendellshow.com. So today on The Charles Tendell Show, what are we talking about? We're going to be talking about when antivirus goes horribly wrong. New news stories that have happened out there where it looks like
cybersecurity expert Charles Tendell.
Systemic failures that brought their whole systems down.
Charles Tendell, he's a certified ethical hacker.
Your emails, it turns out, are not nearly as private as you think.
Show really how vulnerable we are.
Charles Tendell, who deals with hackers all the time, says,
if you have to ask yourself, is this right? It probably isn't.
Welcome. What's going on, guys? Welcome once again here on the Charles Tendell Show. Hopefully you guys know who I am and what I'm about. If not, you're headed over to thecharlestendellshow.com where you can like, subscribe, share, and do all the other fantastic stuff that you do while listening to this show. Now, mind you, you can find it iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spotify, and a couple other places out there online. My personal favorite is SoundCloud. So if you're a member or you're signed up on SoundCloud.com, go do that. If you're not, go do that and follow this show, The Charles Tendell Show. You can find it out there where all fine podcasts are given away, sold, where people create content and you can actually consume the content as you see fit. For those of you who join the show every single day on your drive at 5:17 for you military people, 5 p.m. for civilian people, thank you for being here on The Charles Tendell Show. Enjoy talking to you guys. And any feedback, all things, please send them over to Charles at thecharlestendellshow.com. If you want to come on the show, you can go to booking at thecharlestendellshow.com. So today on the Charles Tendell Show, what are we talking about? We're going to be talking about when antivirus goes horribly wrong. New news stories that have happened out there where it looks like Webroot lost its mind and started deleting Windows itself, which calls into question the validity of Windows being a virus. You know, I've thought that for years, but this is an interesting headline, and now it's been out for a couple of days now, and it's coming to you from thehackernews.com. You can also find it in the feed over at thecharlestendellshow.com, or if you're following the show or me personally on Twitter at Charles Tendell, you can find all of these different articles that are out there. So the story is that Webroot, quote, mistakenly flags Windows as malware and Facebook as a phishing site. So Webroot lost its mind. Popular antivirus service Webroot mistakenly flagged core Windows systems files as malicious and even started to temporarily remove some of their legit files, trashing user computers around the world. The havoc caused after the company released a bad update on April 24th, which was pulled after approximately 15 minutes, but that still hasn't stopped some PCs from receiving it, causing serious issues from not just individuals, but also companies and organizations relying on the software. According to the reports by many customers on social media and Webroot's forums, hundreds and even thousands of systems were broken down after the antivirus flagged hundreds of benign files needed to run Windows. I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh when I do this, but you understand why. Needed to run Windows and apps that run on top of the operating system. Well, the faulty update even caused the antivirus to incorrectly block access to Facebook, because you know the whole world came to an end at that point. Facebook lost it. People lost access to their Facebook. They lost access to their Twitter. They lost access to all their other stuff. And, of course, now it becomes a national headline. Now, whether you guys are still out there worried about this or not, we'll get to that in a second. But it goes on to say, after it flagged the social media network as a phishing site, the website, a phishing website preventing users from accessing their social media. Webroot, and this is a quote from them, has not been breached and customers are not at risk, the company said in its online forum. Legitimate malicious files are being identified and blocked as normal. This, I'm assuming, is before they thought anything was going on. So, what went wrong? Well, the buggy update caused Webroot antivirus service to detect legitimate Windows files, right? Detect legitimate Windows files, including those signed by Microsoft as a Win32.gen files, a generic antivirus that it always that all antivirus jumps to if it can't really identify it and it wants to give it an opportunity to or give it the best guess. Right. So it's like, we're going to fall back to this particular one and that's what you're going to get. Well, after that happened, it says the behavior eventually moved critical Windows system files essential to the operating system's effective functioning into quarantine, making them unavailable to Windows and rendering hundreds of thousands of computers unstable. Even files associated with some of the applications had also been flagged as malicious and quarantined. Webroot is working on a universal fix. Webroot, which claims to have over 30 million customers last year, has suggested fixes for those using Home Edition and Business Edition of the antivirus software. The company's technical team also moved quickly and pushed a fix to the Facebook issue last night, according to the post on the company's forum. And it goes on to say what affected users should do. Meanwhile, the company has provided workarounds to restore files and prevent its antivirus from redetecting the same Windows files as Win32 Trojan Gens, though it's only useful for Home Edition users and not for managed service providers. However, one user on Webroot's forum is reporting that uninstalling Webroot, then restoring quarantine files from backup drive, and then reinstalling Webroot believes in fixing the reinstalling Webroot seems to have fixed the problem. Now, I'm sorry, I'm laughing through this entire thing because if you guys were following the show through all of my RSA coverage, I think it was, I was poking kind of fun at Webroot. Now, mind you, I've poked fun at Webroot for a while because I've had some interesting interactions with Webroot. I've run into some really good, really talented folks over at Webroot, but one of their engineers made a really arrogant, asinine comment to me at a conference once. And what got me most about this, and it was in Denver. We were at an executive business summit. It was at the mayor's mansion. And whoever this person was got up there in his brown corduroy jacket with his patches on his elbows, and he commenced to saying why he was a subject matter expert. He was a PhD in cybersecurity, and he had all these different things. You know, he'd gone through the college requirement to be classified as the expert in cybersecurity, and he looked the part. You know, he looked the part, and for the executives in the room, he sounded the part. But for the hackers that were there, my team included, he was getting picked apart. So at the end of it, I quietly grabbed him and was like, hey, let me talk to you for a minute. Because he had made a statement on stage, right? He had made a statement on stage in front of this group of people about all hackers are evil. Hackers are just bad people, that hackers are the problem. And if we didn't have all of these crazy hackers in the world, what would happen would be we'd make cybersecurity easier. But because hackers are out there to make the world to burn the world down, we have to stay on top of this. So I pulled him aside and I asked him to address that statement. And he kind of stuck to his guns. And then I explained to him that hackers are the reason you have a job. If it wasn't for the hackers on the planet, you would not have the technology necessary to be able to call yourself a cybersecurity expert. Like, it wouldn't be possible. Like, you wouldn't need it. Like, it's not because they're creating all sorts of bad things. It's because they're actually creating technology that you need to be able to exist. And with that, with that kind of stuff, you need they are contributing to your bottom line. They are actually the ones working. They're the ones that are helping you to become a real thing. But we got into this conversation, and he rebutted a couple of times about how I didn't understand. You know, I didn't understand his perspective. I didn't understand his technology. And I wanted to go back and forth, and I wanted to talk to him more and more and more about it. Right? And I was like, hey, let's keep this dialogue open. And as the conversation progressed, it turned into something that I've seen happen quite regularly. And I actually got an email today from someone, from a PhD. I forget where he is. I'm going to do some research and some other things that says that this is kind of a common trend. That when logic and reason and an opposing opinion comes to somebody who's used to being allowed to be presented as an expert, they break down. They fight. They argue. They start calling names. They start deflecting arguments. They start doing a lot of stuff that is largely unnecessary in their world because they don't have an answer. And instead of just saying, you know, I don't have an answer for that right now, but I'll come back and bring that to you, they break down. So he went on to preach to me about everything that he knows, and I made him a bet. I made him a bet that he never took. He never took the bet. He never followed up on it. We did toy with him a little bit, and I'm gonna openly say that because I remember this part more specifically. I made him a bet that if I could find out his personal email address, that he would allow me to at least entertain a meeting with him and the rest of his staff at Webroot as to why antivirus is dead, and why antivirus is that too many people are relying on antivirus as the final line or the first line of defense when it comes to their actual cybersecurity. And I bet him that, you know, after that meeting, if you guys were open to it, I would be able to hack you with absolutely and you know, you'd have to pay for lunch. If I couldn't, if I could, you'd have to buy us lunch. Right? That's how it would work. He never took the bet. Right? He never took the bet. So we fast forward some time later, and when I see things pop up for Webroot, I always ping them, right? So I was on my way to RSA earlier this year, and if you caught my RSA show or you were following the feed during RSA, you probably saw me like poke fun at them every once in a while. It was just like, hey, Webroot, what are you doing? What's going on, Webroot? What you up to? How y'all working out? Because we were able to find that particular individual's personal email address and his personal information. And we were able to find some other things. Just now, this is all open source intelligence that we were able to use. That when we emailed it, we didn't expect a response. But that email address was later available in a popular breach to a popular adult website that was popular for hookups. And this particular individual happened to be married. So you can connect the dots there. But he never responded. But Webroot has always been a funny entity because they're trying to bridge this gap between consumer and enterprise. And I don't remember whether Webroot began as an enterprise company and went consumer or started off as a consumer company and went enterprise. But I've seen them in more places than not. And all around the internet right now, I've heard people say, you know, ditch Webroot anyway because Webroot is garbage, right? Because it's just horrible. Now, I'm not going to say one way or another whether I despise Webroot, right? I think Webroot has some potential. I think they're the only ones in a kind of space. They're not the only ones in that space, but they're trying at least to do some innovation. Where I think they've gone wrong, where I think they've gone unbelievably wrong with everything that they're doing, is we're still holding on to this signature-based, file-based kind of detection when it comes to things. And this type of flaw brings the question of how can I weaponize this myself? How can I trick a Windows machine to use its antivirus or any machine that's running my antivirus to use its antivirus to eat itself alive? And the bad guys have been working on this for the longest period of time. The malicious guys have been working on this for ridiculous amounts of time. In fact, most cryptors are actually written so that the code for the virus itself, the code for the cryptor itself, is meant to avoid most popular antivirus softwares. And they're actually designed to integrate with them, to trick them, to work with how their software actually works to be able to make the job easier on the actual software. So the problem and the actual breakdown of what happened, and if you were running Webroot and you happen to get hit by this, you can restore your uninstall and restore back to the previous data. I won't tell you to install another antivirus, or I won't tell you to reinstall web root, I would recommend you switch antiviruses and go to, say, like Avast, A-V-A-S-T, and check that one out, because that's the one that I prefer. That's the one that I've used for years. It's the one that I've recommended to people. They've been on the show a couple of times, and I've had them on other shows that I've been on. So Avast is my personal favorite. But when it comes to the way you're delivering your technology to consumers, when it comes to the trust that you build. Now, again, small incident, somebody made a mistake, huge ramifications, and it was only 15 minutes, so it probably didn't go very far, right? Probably didn't go very far, but it went far enough, fast enough in the age of the internet that it was all of a sudden everywhere at once. Thousands of computers in thousands of places around the world suddenly had their antivirus eat their Windows systems, and they probably didn't even realize it until they rebooted the thing. Right? The system started getting shaky and doing all the other stuff. Now, the other funny part about this, is it's only a big deal. It's only a big deal because Facebook got hit, because Facebook had a problem, because people lost access to their Facebook pages. And that is an interesting, I don't know, what would we call that? That is an interesting connection, I guess you could say, because more times than not, people don't really care. Things don't become major headlines unless it impacts money, unless it impacts somebody in the government, somebody famous, or some sort of social media that is kind of the cornerstone of our society right now. And I understand that to a point, but the only people that seem to be talking about fundamentally what is wrong here, right? What is wrong here are people like me. Are cybersecurity professionals out there who are seeing this as an indication that we have people in the wrong places that aren't taking the extra time to work through, test, and actually do the closed system or these isolated tests on their hardware or even their software before they put it out. Now, this is WebRoot, so you're a cybersecurity company. You're an antivirus company, and I'm sure you get clients everywhere that say, look, you need a development environment. You need a test environment. You need an ability to have all of this set up a certain way. Now, I get it. This was probably some guy's code who had set it all up and was like, hey, I'm just going to run this script right now. We're going to be done with it. I'm not even going to have to worry about it at this point, and we're just going to move on. And he may have just put a comma where he should have put a colon or where he should have put a period, and all of a sudden, all hell breaks loose. That's the way coding works. But we have this thing called peer review, right? In any instance of any type of penetration test or any type of evaluation or any type of development in the security world, we always have the step of peer review, always. And we always follow that step because, one, we don't want to give our clients false positives, right? Because if I tell my client, matter of fact, if I tell anybody about half the stuff that happens on the outside of their firewall on a daily basis, they would lose their mind. They would freak out. They'd want to unplug their computer from the internet. They would be like, no, I don't want any of my data anywhere near that damn thing. I'm out of here. Right? They would just not care. You know, they would stop using technology. So you don't want to give a bunch of people false positives. So you have peer review. You hand it over to a colleague of yours, even a better colleague of yours, even somebody who's probably going to question your analysis and question your views, your opinion, your way of seeing this particular incident. And they're going to tell you yay or nay. And they're going to go out of their way to disprove you. And I feel like we've seen this absence. We've seen this collapse of that method, that scientific method, in every part of our life. Every single part of our life. And in cybersecurity, it's even more scary that it's happening that way, because it means that we are having things. Like, for example, if we had had peer review for code going out in new products, the Mirai botnet wouldn't have happened. If we had code review for products or services, some of the security holes and backdoors that we're finding in many of our products nowadays would not be possible. I'm not saying that the stuff that's out right now is all horrible because we didn't go through this. I'm saying it would have all benefited from an additional open source kind of review with things. And if you guys caught, was it yesterday's show? No, it was the day before yesterday. I think it was Monday's show, I think. I could be wrong. Monday or Tuesday. I'm not even really sure anymore. Whichever day it was, right? If if you caught the show with was it Dwayne? I think it was Dwayne Melisson, where we were talking about the engagement of people, the engagement of hardware, and how we seem to see this development of consortiums everywhere. Right, we start to see organizations teaming up with organizations. We start to see the hacker mentality, right? The hacker collective. We start to see it leaking into stuff. Hell, if you've been following since RSA, there was Chad Holmes came on the show from EY, from Ernst & Young. They teamed up with Microsoft to bring security as a service to people. With Microsoft, they teamed up together. Now, these used to be two companies where one sold the other's product, and that's how it worked. And now they're actually coming together to produce a product, a service together. They're stepping together into this world. And that's what the culture is kind of all about. You know, like this show, okay, this show, it's everybody. Well, correction, this show, I ask a lot for people to give me input and feedback as to what I am and am not doing. Right. If my show sucks, right, and I can see it in the numbers, right, I can see it in the numbers. If I say something that people like, my numbers go up. Right. And if you don't believe me, ask me. I'll send you my Quantcast results, because that's pretty cool. Right. My dashboard fluctuates. And you can always tell when there are new people, when there's new listeners, and RSA was a huge thing for the show, and I think that was kind of the on-the-map moment for us, and it's great. We're going to be out at Black Hat and DEF CON, so there'll be even more. But this show, I'm always worried. I always want everybody's feedback, because that's your job, right? My job is to get behind the microphone and have the audacity to speak. That's my job. Right. And every single day I have to process through that. I have to think through that. I have to be like, man, let's do this. You know, and stories that come on the show, things that come to the show, sometimes I have a great deal of time to research, like the upcoming segment that we're going to be doing on crime and poverty and education and technology in the United States. Like, come on. Like, that's one that we're really, really, really working on. And we're going to be pulling in experts from everywhere. And I'm excited about that. Right. But you guys give me the feedback of, hey, Charles, that was a little crazy, or, hey, man, right on. You know, keep going. That's great. I love hearing stuff like that. We're hearing this conversation. But that natural ability, or that natural desire to have my audience, to have my peers, to have people relay their opinions to me, right, to have a two-sided conversation, that's something that is embedded in the hacker culture and has always been there. Now, if you're thin-skinned and sensitive, you end up in a position where, oh, I don't know, where you're flaming people, right? And I remember when I was a neophyte, when I had just gotten started in this, when I was dialing in bulletin board systems and posting really vague and generalized, well, how do I hack this kind of questions, right? I got yelled at by a bunch of people, but there were different handles. There were different people out there, and I can't remember a lot of these cats' names. There was one guy, he always wore a trench coat and a frickin' fedora every time I saw him. It was always a trench coat and a frickin' fedora. And we had a blast together because he took the time to sit down and converse with me, to work with me, to share the knowledge with me. And then he brought in other people from his group, and then he brought me on board in one of his groups. And we just had this gathering, this consortium of people, these multiple sets of eyes who were open to the challenge and open to the criticism and open to the conversation of being able to work together jointly on a project. And that was amazing. And that's something that I've seen almost exclusively in the hacker community. And everywhere else in the world, people are so sensitive. They're so thin-skinned. They're so worried that they're about to be made to look wrong or foolish that they run. You know, and I'm going to digress just a little bit here. I had a conversation yesterday with Tabitha Wallace. Right. I had a conversation with Tabitha Wallace. She's from RT. She's got Watching the Hawks or something like that. Right. I talked about it a little bit on yesterday's show, but the whole conversation was revolving around how I feel that Saudi Arabia being allowed on the Council for Women's Rights, the UN Council for Women's Rights, is a good thing. It's a step in the right direction. Because even though we may not agree, we may not see eye to eye on what it is they're doing, it's still giving us an opportunity. If we can hold our tongues and keep our emotions in our pocket or put them in the little bucket before we walk in the room and actually engage our brains with critical thinking and be able to walk through this process with these people, right? Be able to walk through processes, we can open the dialogue. We can open the conversation. We can start to talk. And I don't know about you guys, but anytime I engage in a conversation with literally anyone, that's the whole point. The whole point is for me to be able to give you my input. You give me your input, and I return. And we keep going until there's no more input to be given. And it's not an objective of me to sway you or you to sway me or anybody to point out any flaws in any logic. But if that happens over the course of the conversation, receive it. Assimilate it. It's not criticism. This is how we all move forward together. This is how we all get up together. And this is what I was trying to point out with WebRoot is however this flaw took place, right? A flaw that could have been something as small as just putting a decimal in the wrong place or a comma in the wrong place. And for all of you devs out there, you know what I mean. Right, you know what I mean. It sucks. You go through a debug process, and it was literally one character off where you had an extra space there, your program fails, and now you're back to the drawing board for the rest of your life. And you're going to go through, you're going to have to debug. But it's something, it's an extra step that's horrible that could have potentially been stopped by just throwing this over to another friend. And we do it every day in our lives, right? We do it in every aspect of our lives, every single solitary day. We make a decision, we make a call, we do something else that had we that because we just took it on our own wisdom, right? That decision impacted more people than we realized. And if that impact was negative, we don't know how it worked, it'd be good to get the input from somebody else to find it. I mean, I know, I wish I could be like, okay, I made this choice here, peer review this. Tell me what it looks like. You know, and as the show grows, I'm hoping to get like a producer or somebody else that can sit between me and you guys and actually peer review some of the stuff that I do. But this is why I talk. So I don't have to type everything, because if I had to type all of this stuff, there'd be spelling and grammatical errors everywhere, right? Because my brain moves faster than that. But somebody could take that knowledge, could take that information, assimilate it and clean it up because I took the time to have it peer reviewed. Right. And this is what I mean. This collective thought process seems to be running away from people. People don't engage in conversations anymore they don't engage in conversation anymore to have a challenging conversation. They get into conversations now so that they can have a bit of an echo chamber, so that they can be first to market, so that they can just rush their product, or in this case, their signatures out as quickly as possible so they can say that they did it. And this inability for people to come together and to engage, yeah, in subjects that are going to be touchy, that are going to have to do with somebody's work, that it's going to have to deal with all these different things. I mean, deal with the criticism. I mean, yeah, you're going to get mad, you're going to get angry, but then breathe and walk away. If the situation destabilizes to the point where names are being called and people are being yelled at and things of that nature, take a breath and leave. But be open to coming back to the conversation. Be open to coming back and be receptive of the other person coming to the table. And understand that they're probably going to be just as hurt. You know, they're going to have their own bruised ego or whatever it is, and they're going to have a hard time doing that. And, you know, if you listen in on the show, and I think we're going to get back to this, doing it with the WTFAs on probably Mondays. I'm not even sure if we're going to start it officially. We're going to stay on Mondays. They just kind of pop up as they pop up. But the whole point of that day, or the way we do that show, is bring your passion, bring your heated argument, bring your facts, bring your speculations, but leave your emotions somewhere else, because I want you to engage in the conversation. I want you to have this consortium of people to be able to talk to, and we should all have them, right? We should all have them in a small sense of everything, right? We should all have these things. We should all have a group of friends or a group of family members or the people closest to us who we can give information and expect them to give honest feedback on that information and for us to be able to move forward. And again, maybe it's a whole different show and a whole different topic that I need to run off on to do this one to give it all justice. But WebRoot and that failure an easy failure called into question a couple of different things that I feel shouldn't have happened, not with a cybersecurity company, not with a company that should be staffed by a bunch of hackers. It's the first mistake. I mean, it's a big mistake, and it calls into question the already unstable nature of Microsoft Windows. But hey, clearly it doesn't need a good chunk of its systems files to run. It can run unstable. It almost runs unstable almost all the time out of the box, you know. But a few more minutes with this particular line of code, they would have been late to their distribution. Or hell, it'll probably come out in another day or so that we'll find out that it was an automated process anyway, and it got broken, which means the humans were removed all the way. But this conversation had to have been had. And, you know, since we're talking about people having conversations or people missing those conversations and people being afraid to have those talks, it brings to mind a lot of different things where I've seen people are getting blamed or picked on or hated on or whatever you want to call it, because the other person doesn't really understand what's going on. All they know is fundamentally you are against me, so now we must fight. And when did that happen? When did that happen? When did we get to this point? When did we get to the point of regardless of who we're talking to, regardless of what's going on, we're going to argue and we're going to fight? I think I'm going to leave that one there. I mean, it's a good question that I would love anybody to answer. So if you're over on thecharlestendaleshow.com, send me an email, charles@thecharlestendaleshow.com, or just fill out the form that's on the website and do all that other stuff at, again, thecharlestendaleshow.com. Because I can't really pinpoint when that all took place. So moving on, because there's something else I wanted to touch on before we got out of here. There's a lot of stuff that's floating around the internet right now about cybersecurity and privacy and all these other things. And if I can find the right article, there was an article put out recently. Here we go. There was an article put out recently on The Intercept, and I'm hoping to have its author come on the show and give some insight here. But it's the title of the article is Cybersecurity for the People. Cybersecurity for the People, How to Protect Your Privacy at a Protest. And I watched the video and I went through the article and there were some things in there. And they recommended, you know, Signal, and they recommended not using your fingerprint, and they recommended all these different things. And I agree, right? Signal, amazing. I mean, Signal is a fantastic tool. You know, not having your fingerprint enabled on your phone, if you're protesting and the cops grab you, they can push your thumb on it. But then the next question became, are they thinking about the right aspects? Some of these guys know that the cops can spy on you during these events, right? That people can take note of you. They can track you at some of these events. And I'll give you an example of how this all works, because I do it in almost every presentation that I give. There's a tool, there's a product, a tool called a Wi-Fi Pineapple. Or if you want to go high speed, there's PwnStar if you want to do it all by hand. But there's a Wi-Fi Pineapple, or you can build one, right? You can build one out of a Raspberry Pi. It's really easy stuff. I prefer Wi-Fi Pineapple because it's relatively inexpensive and out of the box done. And somebody else is building the scripts for it at this point, and, you know, I like it to work. But anyway, what's going on, guys? So as you all know, this is a Saturday edition of the Charles Tendell Show, where we like to ask or get your questions answered out there. So if you do got questions, you can get answers. 1-844-9-HACKER will get you on and get you through. Remember, this is a live radio show, so be mindful of the information that you put out there. So we're going to go to the phone lines. Again, the lines are open. 1-844-9-HACKER will get you on and get you through. Looks like we're going to go to, I don't know, where should we go? Let's go David from New York, wanting to know about a stalker. Let's check it out. David, welcome onto the Charles Tendale Show, sir. How can I help you? David, are you there? Going once, going twice. Let's try it again. One more time, going to the phone lines. We got David from New York. He's got a problem with a stalker. David, you there on the Charles Tendale Show?
Yes, hello?
Hey there, David.
Hello?
Now that works. Can you hear me now?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I sure can.
my question is, Charles, for you, is like I've been having a situation with my girlfriend. She's like being stalked through like the internet and Google numbers. You know, so they contact the police. Somehow they keep getting her new phone number, and it's just been craziness. They also got my phone number. And I don't know if we got a Verizon and we have a Wi-Fi system set up, and I just don't know how they're able to get the phone numbers and her and her email and my email.
Okay. Now, have you, since all this began, have you changed you're saying you changed the numbers and they're still getting the new numbers?
Yep. Changed the phone numbers, changed the email passwords, changed the Wi-Fi passwords, and even changed, social media passwords.
Okay. And they're still able to get into all of those accounts?
Yes.
Okay. What makes you think they're in them? Like, are they sending messages? Are they changing settings? What's going on?
Changing settings, yes. Change settings before, I live in New York, so they changed the settings to, Oklahoma. I never lived in Oklahoma. Also, they're using, Google numbers to call her phone, my phone, and, just to say things and then hang up. And then, the police say they can't track those numbers at all.
Mm-hmm. What are they saying? I mean, are they threatening you? Are they leaving any sort of messages? I'm trying to find out if there's a trail or anything that they may have left behind.
This creepy stuff, I could see you, or I see you pulling up to your driveway right now. I've gotten the message as I'm pulling up to my driveway, or if I leave the house, you'll get a message. Oh, you're alone now. She'll get that message, So it could be somebody within the neighborhood. We just moved there, but it's just kind of weird. Like, how are they getting this information?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. What it sounds like is either A, something in your house has been compromised. Like, you guys don't have any cameras or any, you said you changed your Wi-Fi, you changed your internet provider, you changed some of your computers. So you've tried to purge all of that. Is there any other networks nearby? Is there a you said you live in an apartment?
It's a house, but it's like a little small room. It's kind of like an apartment.
Okay. Well, only two real ways that you're going to end up getting hacked this way. One, there's something in your house that the bad guy has used to compromise. Kind of like how you hear about baby monitors and Wi-Fi networks and remote cameras and things getting hacked all the time. That could have happened to you, or it could have happened to your neighbor, and they're just watching you and just messing with you and your systems, like your phone and your tablets or your wireless network stuff, are automatically connecting to something. And using that, if I were a bad guy and I really, really wanted to do this, I would ping your devices. And as soon as you showed up, as soon as you got within an area, as soon as I knew you were around, I'd kind of do this kind of thing. But I'd have to go to great lengths to do that to you. So it would have to be of value to me. Do you think there's anybody that would have that level of value, would want to stalk you like that, would want to do something like that?
Honestly, I really, really don't know. Like, I could, I can go into depth to really, tell you about the neighborhood. It could be, I don't have any enemies. She doesn't have any enemies. It just started happening as soon as we moved into the neighborhood, so it could be whether they just don't like us. And then someone really is that tech savvy to really take it to that limit, mm-hmm. So like when we changed the number, we only gave it to a certain few of people that we need to get in contact with. And still somehow that person was able to find out that number, And then we changed the Wi-Fi password, and then somehow still they were able to get that and use Google numbers to get in contact with the new numbers.
Okay. So here's what I want to recommend you do first. Let's eliminate any of the household possibilities. What I want you to do is I want you to get a product. It's called a Cujo. It's a couple of $100, but what it is it's a personal firewall. It's going to allow, groups of guys like me to be able to monitor how your house is communicating with the internet, and well enough to find out if you have a breach. And if there is some sort of personal breach at your home, they'll detect it, they'll help you close it, and they'll stop the bad guys from doing it. And they will also give you information as to how to track that or hand it off to the police to be able to say, this is what's going on, go get this sucker. So that would eliminate it from your home. If for some reason that didn't detect something and that didn't stop what was going on, if that didn't solve the problem after, I mean, there's still going to be some other stuff you're going to do, like,
hello.
Okay. Well, that was entertaining. I have no idea what just happened there. It was just really odd. So we'll get back to the show here on the Charles Tendell Show for office hours on this fun weekend. See if this will work. Interesting calls about different things. Like, I get people who aren't 100% sure that what they're looking for might be legal. So they call in and they ask questions like this one. Texas, you're live on the Charles Tendell Show. What can I do for you?
Yeah, I guess I am wondering about hacking a WhatsApp account.
Mm-hmm.
I do feel like I have an ethical reason to be doing it, even though it is a private account. It's an individual who I believe has been scamming me for the past year that I met in Africa. And he lived with me for 6 months.
Okay, so you get
done a lot for him, mm-hmm. and I have a lot of questions and doubts in what he's claiming he is and professing to be.
Okay, so you've got somebody that you met, and you're worried about whether or not this person is who they say they are. Now, why are you going after their WhatsApp specifically?
Because that is his form of communication. When he was staying with me, I did have a one-sided conversation translated that I recorded of him, where there was some proof there that there was another woman. He tried to explain it away, but I just want to see if there's any validity.
Okay. Now you had mentioned that there was another woman. Is this an intimate relationship and you're trying to figure out whether this individual is being faithful to you kind of thing going on?
Part of it.
Okay.
Or if he's just after money.
Ah, okay. Okay. There are different ways to figure that out without going directly after the WhatsApp. The problem with going after WhatsApp or going after communication mechanisms with somebody who uses that in kind of a covert way is they'll typically try and cover their tracks. So the level of resistance between you and getting to the information you're looking for by going after that app is going to be much higher. But there are ways for you to be able to gather that kind of information and find out who he's talking to, where he's been going, what he's been doing, if he's been posting things online, sharing pictures with different people, using what we like to call open source intelligence. Most of these people, if he's savvy enough to use WhatsApp, it's likely he's got a smartphone, and that smartphone is probably hemorrhaging some personal information about him that we might be able to intercept and help you figure out a lot of the things that you're looking for. What type of online presence does he have? Is he a big Facebook user or anything like that?
No, he doesn't believe in using Facebook. That's another red flag.
Ah, okay. I would need to get a little bit more information from you. And if you're comfortable giving that over the radio, that's on you. If not, we can communicate offline about it. The biggest thing from what I'm hearing is this individual is not currently in the United States. Is that right?
No, that's
okay.
Right.
Okay, so they're not currently in the United States. They came back and lived with you for a little bit, or they were here and they lived with you for a little bit, but then returned to wherever it is they live. And now you're trying to gather up all this additional information about them to figure out what's going on so that you can make a decision in your life.
Exactly. I don't want to continue helping this person if they're not being true and honest.
Right. I would definitely recommend you go the open source intelligence route, based on geography, based on the amount of time that it would take to actually figure out a way to get into WhatsApp for this individual. Because like I said, there's going to be a lot of things that are going to be barriers to you getting that kind of data going after WhatsApp specifically. So if you're interested in going that route and you want to talk more about it, we can have a conversation here, or you can shoot me an email to projects@hackerslist.com and just put in the subject that you called into the show.
No, it doesn't.
And I will reach out to you and we'll gather up a little bit more information and figure out a solution for you.
Okay. I think I'll go the email route.
Somehow they available to them. And whenever people think technology right now, they immediately think, oh, I should get a hacker to be able to break into that to find out the information that I want. But there are always two questions that I always try and find out, right? If you notice early in the call, she comes in, she says she wants to get into WhatsApp, and it took a little digging to find out that what she was actually trying to verify was, one, that the person on the other side of the keyboard is who they say they are. Two, that this person is being faithful to them, and they wanted to make sure that they weren't being scammed. And this isn't new. And I've had cyber dating expert, was it Julie Spira, on the show multiple times to talk about this whole catfishing thing or this whole scam thing. And I see this a lot of times, especially in women who are looking for relationships online, where they get tied up with these people. These people might show up. They might not show up. They're going to be there. There's a couple of different twists in the idea, but you end up giving them money, and that money ends up disappearing. And then you end up heartbroken and broke. And people want to find these different recourses to be able to figure out who those people are. Now, I'm going to warn you, there are a bunch of red flags, especially when dealing with anybody online, when dealing with any, especially when it comes to love. Right, especially when it comes to your emotion. If they're jumping to a conclusion really fast, don't continue with these people. If you've talked to them for three lines and they're all of a sudden like, oh my God, I love you, and everything that they say is everything that you like, and everything that you like is everything that they like, you should probably put that all together and wait a minute. Right? I'm not saying that love doesn't exist online. I'm just saying these people are a little crazy out there. And definitely don't ever send these people money. Ever. Don't ever send any money in any type of love interest for any reason whatsoever. And I don't care what that reason might be. It could be, I got hemmed up by the local police and need bail money. Have them send you the police report. Have them tell you the name for the police station. Have them send the money to the police station, you know. Or if you still want to be nice to these people, send money to the consulate or the embassy or to somebody in that area that you can use that'll verify it. You know, they can have a conversation. Make them go out of their way to figure out another way to do this. Because if you send money to these cats via Western Union, and I mean, here's another huge flag. Every time I hear about this stuff, right, they might be in Europe, but you're sending, for some reason, Western Union to Nigeria because that's where mom is and his daughter needs stuff. Again, I'm not saying that that's what this case turned out to be. This case turned out to be way more complex after things went down. And it sounds like she's emotionally attached to this person. And that's okay. But remember, she came on with, I want to hack WhatsApp. That was the original conversation. I just want to hack WhatsApp. Why do I want to hack WhatsApp? And you have to do some digging. And this is what Hacker's List is about. So by the end of the conversation, or by the end of it all with this, especially if you're Skyping, especially if you're video chatting with these people, so you know that they are who they say they are. You can use services online like Keybase.io to have them verify some of their social media so that you can guarantee that they are the same person, that, you know, this Twitter account belongs to them, that there is some sort of verification behind it all. You can even go as far as talking to this person on the phone, getting a direct phone number to communicate with them as opposed to just a Skype phone or anything like that. What this does is it makes the communication more personal. And above all, never send money to these people, ever. This type of scam is a billion-dollar business. These guys make money off of this hand and foot, left and right, all day, every day. And what happens most of the time is, well, you sent money at Western Union, and you're not going to get it back. It doesn't matter. I know a woman who what did she lose? She lost $40,000 collectively, is in debt right now, and just doesn't know what she's going to do with her life. $40,000 collectively. Because she felt she was looking for love on these guys. Now, another thing that you can do in a lot of these cases is you can geotag them. You can use different tools and different services online to be able to get their geographic IP address. And it's nothing crazy. It's nothing major. And it's really not going to do a whole lot. And sometimes I'll tell you, you can go and you can use headers. But with modern advancements, most headers are going to point to their email host. But in some cases, if they're using like Outlook or anything like that, it might be tagged with the actual point of origin or the IP address of the system that they're using, regardless of whether they're behind a VPN or anything of that nature. Now, if you get some one of these guys, and if you get one of these guys who are going about their normal days, they're not expecting you to be tech savvy. So you start asking them questions about how they're doing things, what it's like in their part of the world. Do something even more clever, more crazy, like Google the weather in their area before they tell you, and then ask them what it's like outside. Ask them how the storm was. Ask them something specific. Ask them something that they should know for being in the location that they are. They could lie to you. If they lie to you, it's a complete red flag. On a technical standpoint, you could totally geolocate these people and then find out 100% what they're doing. Ask them about their VPN, or wait until you have these people in front of you to make the decision about who you're going to spend any time with, especially if you're planning on spending or sending any type of funds to these people. Just don't do it. Just don't do it. Take a few extra seconds. Take a few extra moments. Take a few extra however long it's going to be for you to be able to get more comfortable with these people. And again, just don't ever send them money. Just don't do it. Uh-oh, that is indeed the out music. So music means you know it. I'm out of time here on the Charles Tendale Show. I love talking to you guys. Hopefully I got my message across. Just don't do the crazy send money to people thing. I'm out of here. Go over to the CharlesTendaleShow.com and do your stuff. I'll see you tomorrow.